This is the one set in modern day London,
where an evil computer
and robotic killing machines lie in wait.
With a trio of companions
and a trio of co-hosts,
it's called The War Machines.
Here
we
go!
We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space, counting Daleks, Thalen, Ood, and the Cybertronic race. Sontarans look like taters, and Silurians all have wonky scales. And the Doctor has a TARDIS, we're reviewing all his tales. Who back when? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back when? Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please. Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal road. Come join us on this odyssey. What other choice could there be than who back when?
Who back when?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a fantabulous episode of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Ponkin. Yes, I am. And with me in the studio...
Yep, that's what we're calling it now, the studio.
Yeah. Is Nicolaili, possibly the artist formerly known as Nickelodeon.
Hello, Whovians.
And joining us over the Skype-matrons is none other than our resident Whovian expert, JD. How you doing, JD?
I'm fine.
Metallic. This is a very special episode because there are three of us. This is the first time we're going to see how this works out. If at any time we start jittering and, zone out a little bit, please bear in mind.
We're a work in progress.
Exactly. Yeah. We're only 27 episodes in on the classic.
Yeah. God. This is the 27th time the charm.
Yes.
Today we've done now over 50 Who Back When. You have done over 50 Who Back
Dude
When.
Dude, Meister, I think we're closing in on 70.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, today we are reviewing The War Machines.
Dun dun dun.
It's an awesome episode. It's also, I actually didn't realize this until today, it's the season finale.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
It is indeed. And it's the start of what will become a big, big change for Doctor Who.
That makes the ending makes a lot more sense now. The last scene was actually quite, like,
very abrupt.
Final, yeah.
Yeah. Very abrupt in a way.
So The War Machines, which we have here, is written by Ian Stuart Black. Ian Stuart Black, and this is a first for classic Doctor Who.
He's related to Michael Ian Black.
I wasn't aware of that. This is the first time that a writer has written two stories back to back, because he also wrote The Smugglers.
Oh, really?
Sorry, not Smugglers, The Savages. So Savages was the last one, and The Smugglers. I keep getting them mixed up because they both have an S in the title.
Interesting.
Also created by Kit Pedler, who came on for this serial to be the scientific, like...
Yeah, he was like the scientific advisor
consultant
on set, and he had the idea for it.
Yeah.
Kit Pedler, the man with the dodgiest name in the world.
I assume that he came to work in a white lab coat every day, just like, I'm a scientist.
With children dangling from his legs.
These are computers, I'm a scientist.
Well, he will have the second biggest Doctor Who villain as his creation.
Oh, really?
Ooh.
Wait, who?
In that he is the creator of the Cybermen.
No way!
Kit Pedler.
Kit. Oh, good old Kit.
That he's like Terry Nation, only good.
Nice one. Shall we jump into a bite-sized chunk of Who?
Let's.
Bite-sized chunk of Who.
The Doctor and Dildo land in modern-day England, and Dildo is all excited and wet at the thought of going to a nightclub, but is nowhere near as big a hit as the Doc and his fab and groovy clothes.
A powerful new computer is being brought online, but it doesn't like humanity much, and decides that it's time to kill them all. Using a combination of mind control and things that are not totally designed to take over the role of the robotic nemesis, the Daleks.
The Doc, with the help of sexy 60s swinging sensation Polly and sexy 60s super sailor Ben, finally abandon the dildo and, with a team of competent companions, heads off to solve the mystery of... Votan and its nefarious war machines.
Be scow over. Okay, let's jump into this. Episode 1 is already... I mean, the way it starts off is already completely legendary. We have, if I'm not mistaken, new music, we have a shorter intro, and we have a new kind of stencil title frame that we've never seen before.
A beautiful stencil title frame.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
And actually, you know, progressive design move from the BBC in the 60s.
Agreed. And also, it's not the first time. It's the second time that the episodes don't have titles. They're just episodes 1, 2, 3, 4.
And you can tell that they're still playing a bit around with the fact that they still only have an overall title by this stencil black and white frame for the War Machines.
Yeah.
And thankfully, it does end up settling down. And next season, we get sort of the standardization until the start of the Pertwee era, when season 1 of John Pertwee ends up with a different title sequence every week again.
Oh, really? Wait, different title sequence?
Different way of putting the name of the episode on the screen.
Oh, right, okay. Awesome. Okay, looking forward to that. All right, so our intrepid travelers, Doc and Dildo, now obviously no longer accompanied by Steven because they just abandoned him essentially on whatever that planet was called in the Savages.
To become the overall bureaucratic leader of them or something.
Yeah.
He's like the administrator of the planet, right?
Yeah. No, I'm sure he's doing a great job. But they now arrive in the swinging 60s in London. Once again, let's just point this out. Let's take a moment to factor this in. Like, once again, no trouble at all going back to 60s London. I mean, they spent quite a few serials not being able to go back and therefore legitimizing the kidnapping of Barbara and Ian. And now, like, yeah, let's just go back to London.
Well, yeah, this is the first episode which is set in modern day London in its entirety.
Yeah, but they do go back on occasion. Like, they have just seen London.
Oh, yeah, you had 20 seconds at the end of the massacre. You had about 30 seconds in the chase. And you had the entirety of Planet of Giants, which is they were 5 inches tall and didn't interact with anyone.
No, that's true, but so they did go back to 60s London.
Agreed. This is the first time where you actually have a full episode, full-sized, actually set in what was at the time modern day.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're talking about something which is could not have happened in the Ian Barbara era because it would have just ended Doctor Who because...
Well, for them anyway.
For them. And
I understand so, it was an editorial change... that they'd received reviews that people didn't like the historical episodes as much.
Oh, really?
Like forward-thinking ones and stuff set in modern day. So in 1966, they made the editorial decision to move things back into the 60s and back into the future, as it were.
Interesting.
Exactly. And you get from now, you get The Smugglers, which is the next episode.
That is a historical, though, isn't it? I haven't seen it.
And you get the Highlanders. But that's it. You know, you don't get another pure historical until... Black Orchid in Peter Davison's era.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's long. That's a long break. Which I'm not sad about.
Yeah, nor
I. I don't really care for the 60s, 70s historicals.
Once you got past Marco Polo and the Romans, you're pretty much downhill for your historicals.
See, the thing is, we've been saying this, but most of the historicals that we've had so far, even though they are nowhere near as entertaining as the sci-fi serials, they've actually not been that bad. Reign of Terror, awesome. Romans, fantabulous.
Yeah, but the sort of writers in the 60s and 70s had this, I mean, beautiful way of capturing, like, especially dystopian stuff and brand new, because I don't know what they're like. The model of sci-fi was so young.
It's post-war as
absolutely.
Well. Like, it's there's always something dystopian looming.
Absolutely, yeah. Deeply entrenched in the Cold War and etc.
But if you look at the episodes which you yourself are very highly rated, they tend to be the more science fiction ones.
Oh, definitely.
You know, I think Marco Polo is the highest rated, or maybe the Romans of the historicals.
Yeah,
and you know, you compare that to something like Marinus, or as Nick said, something dystopian like Censorites. And you do get what is far
better. Dalek Invasion of Earth.
Brilliant.
By the way, let's do a draw parallel between Dalek Invasion of Earth and this serial. There are tons of similarities. This almost feels like a little bit of a prequel story to it.
And not as good.
Okay, anyway.
The back end.
Yeah. That's what she said. Okay, so they have materialized by what is now called the BT Tower, at the time referred to as...
The Post Office Tower.
Yeah, the Post Office. I had no idea it was called that before. And the Doctor says... Quite matter-of-factly, you know, there's something alien about that tower. I can scent it. So it's not just the first line fuck-up in this episode, but also, there is actually nothing alien about this tower. Spoiler alert. He also elaborates and says he's got a prickling sensation in his hand, the same kind of prickling sensation as when he encountered the Daleks in London, in Dalek Invasion of Earth. But have I forgotten this, JD? I'm pretty sure he did not get a prickling sensation in his hand. Like, he didn't have, like, my doctor senses tingling. Like, that didn't exist.
Maybe he just didn't mention it, man. Like...
I will give you a piece of information that you don't know.
Okay.
This takes place in July 1966.
Yeah.
And this takes place in the same day as a Troughton episode.
Is that the one... I'm guessing it's when Ben and Polly leave. Sorry, that's
correct.
Okay.
And so the fact is that that has other alien menaces. So he could be reacting to the tower.
Insane! Dude, mind blown. We cannot top that. Episode overlay. ladies and gentlemen. Have a good night. Holy shit, that is fantastic.
But here's another piece of trivia for you.
Okay.
Dodo is definitively dated from coming from the 15th of July, 1964. That's when she joined the Doctor.
Yeah.
Because what she says here is, oh, the tower, it's finished. Which means that she had to have left Earth before the tower was finished, which is 15th of July.
Yeah.
In the Faceless Ones, we know that today's date is the 22nd of July, 1966, which means that she was traveling for the Doctor for 2 whole years. How did he not kill her? How did he not just
very
throw
good
her
question.
Off the ship?
Yeah, I don't know. 2 whole years.
Well, and then she gets off in 1966. So she's... Well, you mean, like, that's where she...
Hope she'd get off.
Yeah, well...
Wouldn't be so stuck up all the time.
Has she, like, lost 2 years of her, like, terrestrial life?
Yeah, pretty much. This is, very similar thing happens with Barbara and Ian when they return after the chase to London, like, 1 or 2 years have passed or whatever it is. Like, essentially since Doctor Who started as a TV show. And they're like, yeah, you know what, fuck it, it's fine.
I bet.
Life goes on. I've lost my car, my home, and my family, my friends, and my job and everything. It's okay.
Maybe no one noticed Dodo because it was the World Cup. In London in 1966 at this time.
Very possible.
And that's why no one, you know, sort of paid attention to the fact there were war machines on the streets. They were too busy getting ready for the quarterfinals.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okie dokie. Anyway, they go into the BT Tower. In fact, up to the BT Tower. Let's just refer to it. I'm never going to remember referring to this as the Post Office Tower. At the top of which, there is a massive computer lab. And apparently, it turns out, if you just say that you're an expert in computer development, you will just gain access to any lab anywhere. So the Doctor and Dildo just, like, march in.
To be fair, there's, like, 5 of them.
In all of...
On the planet. Yeah. Like,
And they see this computer, and there is just, like, we meet Professor Brett, the dude who's, like, engineered the whole thing.
Mm.
And he says one of the most amazing things. Like, oh, this computer may not be the biggest one, but it's certainly the best one.
That's what I want out of my computer. Girth.
But also, like, it takes up a whole tower. Apparently size is not everything.
Mm.
I'm sorry, I'm not trying to bog out the microphone, by the way. Please feel free to interrupt me whenever you want.
Oh, okay, I will. With the level of sexism which is happening in this room.
Oh, yes! Oh, wow, I'm having a secretary boner right now. Go for it.
The Doctor has introduced Dodo as his secretary.
Yep.
And Dr. Brett's secretary, who is played by Annika Wills, Polly. Now, bear in mind that Brett, who is, you know, a brilliant scientist, says... Polly's pretty smart and a cracking typist.
Yeah.
Those things are of equal weighting in 1966.
Yeah, but he also points this out as, like, he says, she's a cracking typist, but the computer I just built that takes up a whole goddamn tower can type even faster.
Oh, type and think faster than Polly.
This computer, by the way, is referred to as VOTAN.
Why?
So, VOTAN stands for Will Operating Thought Analyzer. Will operating. That sounds so sinister. I mean, it is insane that no one thought, well, let's just build a computer that can control minds.
Also, that just doesn't make any grammatic sense.
No.
Like, read that again.
Will operating thought analyzer.
No, no, it's analog.
No, analog.
Oh, analog. Yeah. Thought analog.
It's analog. But it doesn't make any fucking sense.
It's still ridiculous.
Oh, that's bullshit. Okay, but I looked up VOTAN.
As did I, yeah.
Yeah, and like we watched this just the other night, Nick and I, and the only bell that it rung for me was from the Nibelungen, whatever it's called,
yes.
The Legend of Nibelungen.
It's from Wagner's Ring Cycle.
Yes, which is based on the Nibelungenlied. But, not just that, VOTAN can mean a whole metric nut ton of things, including, it was also the name of 2 German World War II radio navigation projects. VOTAN 1 and VOTAN 2.
Oh shit, that's right!
Yeah, okay, we are in post-war London, essentially.
Yes.
I mean, this is not that far off. Yeah?
Absolutely.
We're all thinking about it.
We've got, has just ended.
Yeah. we've got this whole spiel ahead of us, a 4-episode spiel about a terrible menace trying to control the masses and kill, like essentially exterminate, like issue this new Holocaust essentially. And they name it after a German war project.
Yeah, it's not a massive surprise to think that somewhere in the mid-60s the BBC still had a fairly like stringent editorial policy of fuck the Germans.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. Like, oh, also, sorry, in the list, there was also a German tanker in World War I called the VOTAN.
In a less sinister turn, there is a... VOTAN was also an alternative name for Odin.
Yes.
Which I like better.
Yeah.
I like better than, harbouring post-war resentment.
Yeah.
But my issue around the entire thing is, A, it is not some sort of Viking machine. It's meant to be a computer that just controls other computers.
Well, not just other computers. It's called a will operator. It controls humans. It is built to control human minds.
Ah, no. He did not build it to control humans.
Why the fuck did he call it a will operator?
Because
operated by
will. Wait. Okay, hang on. Let's introduce a line to this episode of Who Back When. Throughout the entire viewing, Nick's and my viewing of this serial, I would ask questions about, like, why something made no sense, and Nick would always have the standard answer of...
Shut up, Leon. That's why.
And I think... And I think that that could be the tagline.
If we can't come to a mutual agreement...
The answer is always, because shut up, that's why. Yeah.
But, okay, my one is more grammatical, right?
Okay.
It's not a Viking, right? The first word is definitely will. It's will operating.
Yeah.
Right? Why don't you just call it Wotan? You know, it's got nothing Viking about it at all. Just call it Wotan.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but just because they're pronouncing it in a Germanic way.
Well, either way, it's all bullshit, because I kept seeing the crates with the W, like,
Enterprises.
Those are nefarious crates. Yeah. I had to, like, go, Wotan, yeah, that's... Okay. It's like equivocation. It's like weird, like, substitution I had to have in my head every scene that there was a crate with a W in.
Yeah. Let's speed through this.
Before we move on.
Okay.
Just for you, Leon.
Yeah.
Polly is played by Annika Wills.
Nice. Okay. Trivia alert.
First of all, she was one of the candidates slated to play Susan Foreman.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yep. Went to Caroline Ford. Yeah. She eventually goes on to play Polly in some of the Doctor Who audios. She also plays Lady Louisa Pollard, who is the mother of the Eighth Doctor's companion, Charlie Pollard.
Oh, wow.
And she was married to Michael Goff, who played the Celestial Toymaker.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Alfred of Batman fame. Awesome.
Yeah.
Nice one. Nice.
I've finished
now. So,
yeah, done now. That's my entire thing for the show.
Okay, so just to round off the whole Wotan thing. So this thing can think. It's an AI that they've built. And in order to prove this, the Doctor asks a question and Dildo asks a question. Doctor just essentially asks a question that any calculator could answer. What is the square root of whatever? And it's like, holy fuck, that's amazing. It could calculate it. And Dildo goes, what does the word TARDIS mean? A, it's an acronym. There's not like the dictionary definition of TARDIS as a word. It's not a noun, it's an No. Okay, I'm sorry. There is no reason for it to know what TARDIS means.
No, but...
That is not a word that exists.
Actually, it's a much more pertinent line of questioning than the Doctor's, because that was just, like you said, a calculating fact. Whereas the Professor said, this thing knows everything. She asked, a factual statement, and it gave it... Which is, like, did that not get alarmed? I was like, there's no fucking reason that machine should know what a TARDIS is. Why does it know what it is?
Yeah, the Doctor goes...
Let's break it up into firewood immediately.
Well, the Doctor goes...
I agree with Nick. The Doctor's question is stupid.
I think it's a better question than asking it some maths, but how would anyone ever assume that this goddamn stupid machine that has the dumbest name ever, why would anyone assume that it knows what TARDIS means? It is bullshit. Dildo is an idiot. I'm glad she's gone.
I think, you know what I think about Dodo, but I think that this is possibly the most intelligent thing that Dodo has done in her time in Doctor Who, because theoretically, it should have turned round and gone, no fucking idea. But instead, the only way it can know is if it's reading Dildo's mind.
Oh,
and that should have been the world's
go.
Biggest red flag.
Which leads me to a question I have for both of you gentlemen.
I have a bigger problem with this entire scene. Even the bloody computer gets Vicky's bloody mistake and does it plural.
Yes, got that in
my
notes
as well.
It's
time and relative dimension in space, not plural, you stupid machine.
Yeah, and Dildo doesn't notice this. Doctor doesn't notice this.
Do you know what would have been better? What would have been better is if, time and relative dimensions in space. No, motherfucker, you're wrong.
This machine is rubbish.
Answer invalid. Let's just make Commodore 64s out of you.
Okay, I've got a question for both of you chaps. So, the machine can read minds.
Mm.
It has an audio input.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we later find out that it can transmit thoughts, right?
Right.
As in, it can implant thoughts telepathically, and it can communicate over phones, and it has an audio output, as in a speaker system, and a voice and everything.
Sort of, yes.
Yeah. It has a voice. voice, dude. It has a voice. And it can speak, it can give orders. Yeah.
Right.
Why does it give all of its responses on printouts?
Well, it seems to like to flex all its different outputs. Like, I'm going to print this one, then I'm going to chat to this guy, going to implant a thought over there. Just, you know, he's moving and shaking. I don't know why he can't just stick to a medium.
I don't know, but, you know, Siri on my iPhone says on the screen what she's saying to me.
Okay.
It's doing the same thing.
It's
printing out and talking at the same time.
Really? Really? Is that... Okay, but that's not what Votan is doing. Okay, fuck it. We're spending way too much time on this.
There's another fun part. After Dodo's made her Pat's most brilliant line of questioning and just...
Of her
entire, like, life. She then goes, all these computers are a bit much for me. Let's go dance!
Yeah, my head hurts.
Yeah. Where's that nice hot, like, New York hotspot? It's like, what the fuck is that? Like, why is it in the middle of the day doing some quite important, like, work? Why do you need to now go to a nightclub?
That brings up another point. This is the start of completely different time zones within London occurring at the same time. Because they go to a nightclub in Covent Garden. It is nighttime. In fact, we later find out that they left the place just around 3 a.m. But this is happening at the same time as all of the daytime shit that they're doing in the lab.
Unless, of course, the lab is just 24/7.
It's happening at the same time!
I'm just saying, like, they might have...
Okay, I'm going to continue being pissed off about that. Anyway, so Dodo goes off to a nightclub in Covent Garden called Inferno with Polly, where they meet whom, JD?
Ben Jackson.
Bada bing.
The quite clearly, like, anxious and depressed sat at the end of a bar, Ben Jackson.
Yeah.
Why has no one sent this motherfucker home? He's been at the bar for, like, 5 days.
In his uniform. For no reason, which clearly he does not need to wear, because later on when he actually engages in the plot, he does not wear it.
No, but this scene shows one thing. It shows that Polly manages to have more personality in one scene than Dodo managed to get in an entire series.
Yeah, in fact, Ben and Polly, both of them, they have more on-screen charisma than, I think, possibly any other companion up until now. I mean, Barb and Ian were great, but these two, maybe they're actually better written as well. Like, they're just more engaging.
Well,
characters.
Ben again marks a creative departure in having a character that is got a regional dialect.
Yes. Okay. You know? Yeah, we had this chat as well.
Mm. Well, with the exception of Dodo was meant of Dodo's meant to be regional accent, which managed to fluctuate so much during the state of one episode that it was just violently abusive.
Yeah.
I'm going to be Mancunian this one. No, it's time to be Essex.
What was her first episode called again?
She appeared right at the end of the massacre for like 2 minutes.
That's what it was, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're wondering what we're talking about, go back and listen to our review of The Massacre. Okay, anyway, cut back to daytime tower. Professor Brett thinks someone's in there. That sort of pans out, whatever. Cut back to nighttime nightclub. Dodo is very slowly being hypnotized in absentia. Cut back to the following day at noon. That's what we learned. The following day at noon, there was going to be a conference at the Computer Society.
Yes.
Yeah, where they're going to unveil Votan to the world. This is happening whilst Dodo is still at the nightclub before 3 a.m, by the way.
Yes.
Noon the following
day. And then
day.
We're introduced to Sir Charles.
Sir Charles, Charlie boy, holy shit. And the Doctor refers to the other dude who's behind, like, engineering Votan, Professor Crimpton, as that little man.
Yes. Sir Charles. Charles being his last name and Sir his first.
Then, just sort of speeding through some bullet points here, the Major is... wait, hang on, the Major. Have we even introduced the Major? The Major is this... He just happens to be a military figure who's around Votan all the time.
He's like security, I understand.
Basically, but he has a military rank.
Well, yeah, but that's quite...
And he wears civilian clothing.
That's part of the course in the 60s, because everyone is post-war, so everyone...
Oh, I see,
anyone that was an officer, you could still quite... So, have you ever seen Are You Being Served?
No.
Well, there was a colonel in that, and he was like the man.
JD, don't look so incredulous. No, I haven't. Dude, I didn't grow up in this country. I have not seen this show.
Well, basically, it's a department store. It's a sitcom about a department store, and the manager is a colonel, and they all refer to him as Colonel. Is it Colonel? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
In Fawlty Towers, there's a character as well.
He's either Colonel or Captain. Captain Peacock.
Captain Peacock.
Anyway, so yeah, it's absolutely par for the course in the 60s, and actually all the way up to keep your military rank in civilian life.
Okay. He's at Votan, is being hypnotized by Votan. This is the will operating mechanism of the thing, I take it.
Yes. Oh, there was another thing that I'm remembering, that in the first scene scene, someone said something about its magnetic pull. Like,
oh, oh yeah, yeah.
Like a, and then, you know, it's like, oh, I'm just walking towards the machine. It sounds like sucking me in, which I'm just like, that's great. It is, you know, you, there's a giant computer that can read and minds and implant thoughts and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know why it would make non-magnetic things magnetic.
Do you mean such as the...
humans.
Yeah, or the doctor's hand.
Yeah. Why would it, like... how does it then, like, just suspend the laws of natural physics?
I think maybe it has something to do with the program regimentator that the doctor mentioned before.
Oh, yeah.
Just, like, random bullshit term. Program regimentator.
Oh, this is the program regimentator.
Sorry, JD, you were about to say something there.
No, it does it by magic. That's all I can think about.
That's what it is.
Because it makes no sense.
Come back to the nightclub. There's a phone call for Dodo.
Mm.
Votan has now hypnotized every motherfucker in the BT Tower. Goes, we need to find Doctor Who. Actually, I think that's mentioned in a little bit.
Yes.
But yeah, refers to, or is going to refer to the Doctor as Doctor Who. And in order to do that, calls the nightclub, effectively making a call through time, because it is calling from around about midday to 3 a.m. the following night.
I feel like you're going to have an aneurysm trying to figure
it pisses me off, like, dude. I am completely within my right to be pissed off.
Just
fuck it. All right, so calls the nightclub. All right?
Yes.
Fine. All right. Let's just accept that it doesn't work. Okay, it makes no sense. Doesn't matter. It calls the nightclub in order to hypnotize Dildo in order to get her to come to it in order to hypnotize Dildo in order to go to the doctor and Lois to him. So...
when you say it like that...
it makes no sense. Why not just hypnotize her on the phone right away?
Maybe that's just how it gets down.
Oh, it's bullshit. It is bullshit.
Carry on.
No, go for it. Sorry.
Well, I was about to do the Dodo returning scene. So she's gone back to the post office tower, the BT tower, received its orders, her orders,
yeah.
From Wotan that we need to get Doctor Who.
Yeah, I think that might be the end
of... Doctor Who is required.
That's what it is, yeah. I think that might be the end of episode one, actually.
Which is some bullshit. Is that the only time he's ever referred to as Doctor Who?
JD, go for it.
His name is not Doctor Who.
Is that the only time?
Well, this infallible bloody machine, A, gets his name wrong.
Yeah.
B, he says there is one special human brain that Wotan needs.
Exactly. So he knows what TARDIS means, but doesn't know that Doc's not human.
And his name's not Doctor Who.
Exactly.
Ever.
Okay. Well, Wotan is a piece of shit, basically, is I think what we can conclude here. End of episode one. In which, the end credits, Wotan is just credited as Wotan.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, that's the only... this is the only time it happens.
Really?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Regardless, yes. It is ridiculous.
Agree.
I like the idea that Wotan had other creative projects afterwards.
Wotan, you may know this computer from such projects as...
Wotan as Mr. Darcy. Just a real classically trained actor. Right, so episode two.
Yeah. Again, called only episode two.
Yeah.
No names.
Again, still a very, like, it's a very, very pleasing opening credits with the war, mash, eens, war machines. Like,
yeah.
That's very good.
Very cool. We go back to the nightclub and Dodo returns.
Dodo returns. Everyone is incredibly upset that she's been away for a very short period of time. as a grown woman has taken her place off somewhere and isn't. You should have called. What's fucking. So I'm going to do a bit of a spoiler alert, obviously, you know.
Spoil away.
I imagine everyone has already seen it that's listening to this, and you know that Dodo leaves at the end of this serial. With, like, so much as a... Yeah.
I'm so happy.
JD's doing a pretty funky dance there, listeners. But she leaves just like a note or like a you know, on the back of a fucking fag packet, like, oh yeah, I'm off, cheers for the intergalactic travels, I'm just gonna kick it in 1966 for a while. And now I'm back to an eyelid. Yeah. She leaves for 20 minutes in episode two, and people are going, people are dropping a lung. What's the difference?
But then also, when she goes, well, some friends of mine called the nightclub.
You have friends?
Yeah, you have friends, that's weird. How did they know you were in the nightclub? She just goes, oh, it's a long story, and no one cares. Like, that's it, alibi explained. actually fine, solid as a rock.
Ah, it's a long story, and we don't have much time.
they're going a bit crazy, and, you know, Polly asks a very important question. For Polly's character development in this.
Yeah.
Because she asks the question, I'm going to start phoning the hospitals, what's her surname? And, you know, the doctor says Dodo Chaplet.
Yeah.
But Polly's getting a bit jealous, because Dodo actually has a surname.
Ah.
Polly never gains one.
I thought it was Polly Wright.
It is. But it is only in the books, which came many, many years after.
Oh, I see.
That is it listed as Wright. She doesn't actually have a surname in her entire Doctor Who on-screen
person. Sucks to be her.
Not she's like jealous.
Jealous. Jealous of Dodo.
All right. They are being kicked out of the nightclub anyway, because they're closing the nightclub because it is 3 a.m.
Hmm.
At which point they need to step into a taxi cab and go to Sir Charles and his wife. Because what are they going to do there at 3 a.m? I mean, there is literally the only reason they might have is to go fuck both Sir Charles and his wife. And also
Sir Charles and Mrs. Charles. Oh, there's a fun scene with the bum.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so anyway, Dodo turns up and she just lies her ass off about going to visit friends, and the doctor totally doesn't call her on her bullshit. And they start going to get a taxi. Ben runs off and gets one, while two people who have obviously got chloroform in their hands.
Yeah. And make such a big deal of showing it to the camera.
Yeah, are totally Vord hiding.
Yes.
in the alleyway. You know, they are so easily spotted by anyone that has a brain.
Because they're wearing, like, high-vis trench coats.
Oh, no, they're wearing those trench coats that are so, like very awesome and very particular to 60s factories.
Yeah,
you know, those
exactly.
Brown ones.
Yeah,
are,
exactly.
Like, awesome.
Factory worker outfits, number one.
And they're just like, it's 3 a.m, guys. Fancy a little drink of chloroform? Like... Oh, yeah, those are just factory workers. Sometimes they hang out in that alleyway.
Yeah. You were saying something about the homeless man.
Ah, yes, the bum. So he gets out of a very nice cab. So, I mean, if he's homeless, how has he got a crown? That's quite a lot of money. Like, he has a pound on him, which is weird. Mm. Anyway, then the taxi driver is unnecessarily abusive for a man that has a pound and
trying to pay him.
Yes.
It's not like he's trying to, like, get a free ride here.
Yeah, he's just like, you don't have change. In fact, this is your fucking fault, taxi man. You are too mean to this homeless guy. He upset me. But anyway, so the troop commandeer said taxi that the tramps just vacated, and then he heads to bunk down in a warehouse.
Yeah, right next to the club, coincidentally, and sees that they are assembling these war machines, and it's the major who's in charge of it.
Hold on, we have not actually fully explained the edict of Wotan to be building war machines.
Right, yes, you're right. So there were orders saying we will build war machines that will kill all humans who oppose Wotan.
I have a problem with all of this.
Oh, really? Do you now? Let's hear it.
Okay, it's been about 4 hours since Wotan turned evil.
Yeah?
It would be impossible now, in modern day 2015, for manufacturing plants to be tooled up to create the exact items required for building these war machines, stick them in Wotan-branded boxes... send them out all across London. It's, you know what, Apple can't do that. And I have probably...
I beg to differ, because we will soon find out that you can just say, we need to start building this war machine now, pan to the side, pan back, and have built it.
Now, there are two things, right? A, I think you might misunderestimate Wotan's brand marketing strategy. It's actually very, very coherent and quick to roll out on a minimal budget. And secondly,
what do you mean, minimal budget.
Oh yeah, I guess
money is no object.
And secondly, shut up. That's why.
Also, just to point out, they have started assembling the war machine 6 minutes and 30 seconds into episode 2 of 4. That's the start of preparations.
Yeah, and 6 minutes and 29 seconds into episode 2, it's finished! There is a completed model!
Yeah, pretty much. But we will also find that they test and build and test and build up until halfway through episode 3.
That was actually the most sinister part of this whole serial.
Yeah,
was the test.
The prep. This is project management at its finest.
This is kind of like a freaky thing that in a post-war, like, writing studio, they might think, oh no, kids or like, you know, people will know what it's like to develop and test you know, terrible machines of destruction, because it's happened for the last 10, you know, like, yeah, happened for almost a decade previous to great effect. So we're going to need to put in some bits of verisimilitude, like literal bits of, you know, the semantic field of testing weaponry into our fucking...
Yeah, and also testing on
family show.
Testing it on live subjects and everything. No, very child friendly.
Sounds quite a lot like World War II.
We get the silliest chase sequence since Benny Hill, as the said homeless man stumbles in, is discovered, and is then chased around by men who don't move their arms when they run.
None of those guys are making the England rugby team anytime soon. He just sort of like just takes one step to the right and they're all fucks. Take one step to the left and they're all completely baffled by his lateral movement.
Also, by the way, can we have a soundbite? Probably the second soundbite so far in this episode of Major Brett, or is Major Brett, sorry, Professor Brett, whoever it is who's setting up the whole thing.
I think it's the Major, is it the Major? In, or is it Professor Kempton in the warehouse, and then Brett is in the tower.
No, Brett, other way around, is Brett in the warehouse.
Oh, Brett in the warehouse.
Brett in the warehouse, okay.
To be honest, they all become interchangeable.
They do.
Mustachio.
One is the guy who looks like evil Stephen Fry. He's like Stephen Fry from the Black Lodge. Anyway.
I'm not endorsing that. Sorry, Stephen.
Okay. Soundbite as he delivers the most Dalek-y, "He must be destroyed." Soundbite.
"He's a danger to us. He must be destroyed."
Shazam. Cut to Charlie.
Yeah.
Who is now doing with the doc what the doc went there at 3 a.m. to do. Namely, the following day, going through letters of resignation from two of his underlings.
It's important to restaff when faced with certain, you know, apocalyptic doom.
I have a bigger problem with this, because the doctor is reading the Times, which is fine. It's a very doctor thing to do.
Yeah. So it's the following day.
It's morning. You know, the doctor feels like someone is going to get up at 7, have a little bit of kedgeree, maybe some coffee, you know, get ready for the day. And he's reading in the newspaper about the tramp that was found dead in Covent Garden.
Yeah, on the front page, by the way.
My list of problems with this is legion. The first one is front page news, no. Second one is he was killed at 3 a.m. Someone literally had to run into the newspaper office with the news of a tramp death in London in 1966.
In Covent Garden, outside a nightclub.
In Covent Garden, outside a nightclub, and literally say, right, get rid of the front page news, right, stop all the presses, stop the press.
Let's get this photo we have of the guy when he was alive for no reason whatsoever and stick it on the front page.
Do you know what? I wasn't agreeing earlier. What I'm going to do now is say that, yeah, this timeline of this episode is fucked.
Thank you.
That specifically is terrible. I like to think that they pushed out, like, some, I don't know, some big statement from the Soviet Union, just like, oh no, you know, screw what they're saying. A tramp has been murdered in London, in cosmopolitan London.
It must have been the capitalists.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, Polly suddenly arrives and says that she was sent to Charlie's pad by Brett. Why? Why did Brett not just hypnotize her? Why wasn't she just taken over? It's like, no, don't come here as someone whom we actually will hypnotize eventually, because we want you to be hypnotized. We're just not going to hypnotize you. We're going to send you to the enemy right now. In fact, why not hypnotize her and then send her in? Because Dildo failed to get the doctor. Maybe Polly could get the doctor.
Wait, huh? Isn't she hypnotized?
No, she's not hypnotized. Not yet.
She gets hypnotized, though.
No, she gets hypnotized later.
She's Wotanned at this point.
She's not Wotanned because she then leaves. No. She leaves again, and that's when she's Wotanned.
What? Dodo?
No.
Polly.
Oh, sorry. That's my fault.
Haha.
Ah, yes. No, Polly. I don't think Polly's not Wotanned at this point.
Exactly. So why did Brett just let her go? It's bullshit. Anyway, okay. Wotan then tries to hypnotize the doctor over the phone because he's able to do that, except he never does.
Because the doctor is mentally really strong. And actually, to be honest, you know, William Hartnell, for all of his line fluffs, actually does actually do some fairly good acting.
Oh, he's super theatrical, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, but it is.
I like it. I'm not criticizing
it. It was as if something enormous and terrific was trying to absorb me. I think that the villain of this story has made one big error, which was to trust Dodo with his plans.
Yeah.
Because she, you know, obviously the Doctor hasn't been hypnotized by this phone. And, you know, Dodo goes on to explain the entire plan. Yeah, and then says, yes, and it was just like an electric shock. And then Dodo says, well, you've received no instruction. And the Doctor says, from whom, my dear? And then Dodo was about to actually give away from who, but then Polly interrupts. Dodo is thick. Even taken over by a super masterful brain. She has no personality or brain or common sense or, like, charisma or personality. And the problem is, when she's playing this sort of mind-controlled zombie, you can't tell it from normal Dodo.
Okay, yes, that's true. But also, she isn't just interrupted by Polly. She also pulls the Keys of Marinus, because she's about to say everything. It's just as in Keys of Marinus, where they go like, how do you know that I killed... nothing. You know, like, just trying to sweep it under the carpet, and everyone buys it. And in fact, that's pretty much what happens. Doctor, however... Oh, sorry, go for it.
Okay, no, I'm not going to defend Dodo.
Okay.
It's definitely not a Dodo.
You better not defend her.
But all of the characters that somehow get sort of Votan'd, I think it highlights a fundamental problem with Votan, that as a concept, great villain.
Yeah.
Has no depth. Has no actual, like...
Oh, great.
...plan or tyranny or anything that...
No, well, like, the plan is take over the planet.
Yeah, but they say it's bullshit, isn't it? If he had more, like...
Yeah, but that's what most big villains have.
Yeah,
like,
but they have, like... I don't know, they
just
have
like that.
Like, he went... To coin a phrase that the kids use, he went 0 to 100 real quick. Like, he just went, I exist. There was no, like, subtext or build-up or change.
Okay, there's
like,
no actual
just
motivation.
Went to, like, yeah, I'm this, now I'm this. And it's... I don't know, it's hard to be... Like, the Daleks, who are indiscriminate killing machines or, you know, exterminating machines...
They talk about racial purity and stuff like that.
Yeah, and they have mystic... You know, they have, like, myth and legend and, like, all of that. You're just like, you're a big box. Ah, you hate me, do you, big box? Like, that's... I don't know.
I think maybe...
No depth.
So, Votan was invented by Kit Pedler. Terrible name. who also invented the Cybermen, who, in terms of their motivation, right, and drive, very similar. Mechanical in nature, just trying to kill organic shit.
Yeah, or assimilate and move on. I don't know
if that was the case back then, though. I think that was more like, oh, we're robots, fuck everyone.
Yeah. Maybe that's why the Daleks still capture the hearts and minds a bit more.
Maybe.
But just generally, Votan was hard to get on board real quick, because he was just like, oh, I've got war machine now. You know, it's just, I don't know, there's no, impetus beyond, like, following programming, but he's supposed to be able to expand and learn beyond his programming, so you think he'd have, like, a more fleshed out manifesto.
See, I think that's what we now have. You very rightly pointed out last night that this is essentially what sci-fi has been all about for the past, like, 45 years. Since then, this
an
is...
an entire subgenre of, you
computers
know...
get too intelligent, take over the world, kill humans, boom.
Yeah.
Yeah? Like Skynet, essentially, but we see this in so many sci-fi films and stories and books, whatever, right?
Ow.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But now, at this point, that trope has been refined.
Mm.
Now we have, when computers reach a certain level of intelligence, they absorb part of, like, the negative side of being human.
Mm.
Like, they get so intelligent, they actually become, like, evil humans. Zero morality, but there's a little, like, hint of humanity in there, right?
Yeah.
I think so. It's almost like a child just smashing shit, right? Whereas here, it's just calculation, because it's such a new trope in TV sci-fi.
Yeah.
It's like, we haven't really figured it out. Let's just make it different. Let's just make it a calculating computer.
Okay, yeah, I'll buy into that.
I'll go with that as well. I agree.
Okay.
So anyway, the Doctor turns around and basically now hypnotises Dodo.
Yeah.
And basically says, right, you're going to sleep for 48 hours. When she wakes up, I want you to give her absolute peace.
Can I ask you a question, JD?
Oh, please feel free. This is my favourite moment in Doctor Who at
this really?
Point.
Okay, well, before we get to your favourite moment, because I know why it's your favourite moment... So the Doctor hypnotizes her, slash she is already hypnotized by Votan. The Doctor, regardless, de facto is able to make her do anything. He's able to make her speak, move, fall asleep. And then after he's made her fall asleep, he goes, oh, I wonder what the whole mystery was. I wonder why she tried to lure me there. Why would you say, did he not just ask her? He is now in control of her. Why not just ask her? Instead, he fucking makes her fall asleep and then goes, well, she's asleep now. I guess we'll never find out.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
He's a bit silly.
I think on LinkedIn, I'm not going to endorse him as a hypnotist. I'm just going to... Don't believe in his skills.
Okay, JD, this is your favourite moment in Doctor Who. Go for it.
And that is the last we ever see of Dodo.
That nicely sums it up.
And it's so inauspicious. I don't
we don't know that this is the last time. Absolutely. It's just like, we're assuming she's going to recuperate in the countryside.
Is there any trivia associated with this, JD?
Yeah, why was she kicked out of the show?
She was shit.
Did she want to leave?
I don't think so. I think I do know. She was pushed. It wasn't that she wanted to leave.
Okay.
Okay, but we do have some trivia on Goodbye Dodo.
Okay.
Jackie Lane, who plays Dildo, is the only living actor or actress not to have reprised their role in a Big Finish audiobook.
Oh, wow.
She's the only one.
What do you reckon? Does she hold a grudge? Is it too painful to return to the role of Dildo?
It's probably. She has only done one thing on about Doctor Who since, which was she appeared on the 50th anniversary after show party in a video message. That is it.
I reckon if anyone out there knows Jackie Lane, ask her if she wants to come on the show and be interviewed by us.
Like Jana Fielding, she went off to be an agent. And
I get it, because after the role of a lifetime, you know, like, it's hard to go back to acting. When this role is so, like, it's all-encompassing, it's kind of like Heath Ledger in The Joker. It must have just taken over her world where she didn't know where, you know, her normal life was and where Dodo begins. So I sort of get it. It's complicated. I know I wouldn't want to return to it. It's just a, you know, mix of emotions.
Yeah. Also, like, yeah, exactly. How can you top that?
How can you?
All right.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I still haven't finished.
Go for it.
It gets worse for her. She's been in a couple of books.
Okay.
The big one where she's the main character in it is called Who Killed Kennedy, where she suffers mental problems continuing on from what happened with Votan in this episode. She becomes homeless, is tortured by the Master, then gets pregnant and is murdered.
Holy shit. That is dark. Someone really hated her.
In the book The Man in the Velvet Mask, Dodo loses her virginity to a sexually transmitted virus-infected guy called Dalville from an alternate universe, then decides to keep the infection as a reminder of the universe when she returns to the Prime Universe. Stupid cow.
What is happening?
That is insane. Someone really hated the shit out of Dildo. Oh my god. Were those two stories written by the same person?
No.
Were they published by the same... Were they published by, like, I guess BBC or whoever?
The Who Killed Kennedy wasn't, but The Man in the Velvet Mask was published by the Virgin New Adventures books, which was authorised by the BBC, yeah.
I think I need an adult.
What the fuck is going on? That is really dark. Okay, one more, like, dipping of the toe in this pool of darkness. What happened to her child? Was her unborn child also murdered, or does she give birth to a child that then has to grow up without a mother?
She's pregnant and then gets killed while she's pregnant.
Okay.
She doesn't give birth.
I just wanted to make sure, just so that we know the full extent of the horror of her fate.
Anyway, back to the much cheerier subject of apocalyptic London in 1966.
Yeah, shall we jump into a little soundbite, maybe, just to cheer us up a little bit?
Let's.
JD, would you like to hear a soundbite of what a war machine sounds like?
No. Because I've just listened to them twice.
It's the worst sound in the world.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, here you go. Soundbite.
Zombie bite.
Yeah, it's exactly, it's like a robot zombie. Absolutely horrific. And then Shazam, Polly is taken over or Votanified or whatever.
She's Walton.
We see the war machine. Basically, Ben has gone to go and go to the warehouse to try and find Polly. We see the war machine in action. And yes, it's the BBC trying to make another version of the Daleks where they don't have to pay Terry Nation tons and tons and wheelbarrows of money.
Yeah.
Could they not have come up with something slightly more elegant?
Or you mean something that makes sense?
Well, I don't know. I think
it makes perfect sense. It just could be like, it wasn't like this was... Right angles. Like, they've never heard of like a curve or...
I don't know, man. I feel like they really just tried to rip off themselves. Like, okay, so we have mechanical things. Okay, granted there is something biological inside, but we have de facto robots that wheel around, and they're made up of very jagged edges and shit. Let's make another thing that looks roughly the same, and...
But massive, and boxy, and terrible.
Yeah, because they have to outdo themselves. Like, if they just created something that looked exactly like a Dalek, people would go, yeah, that's just a cheap Dalek knockoff. In this case, they were probably hoping. People would go, holy shit, this thing makes a Dalek look like a cupcake.
I guess so. What they ended up producing is something that I would imagine a flat-packed, like, suicidal robot from IKEA would look like.
Yeah.
Missing a few things. Someone didn't have an Allen key.
With chomping hammer arms. Very, very cool.
They're the funniest things.
They're amazing. It's like a slightly less flexible version of the robot from Lost in Space.
Now, did either of you ever watch the series where the sort of like gladiatorial robot battling series, Robot Wars?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
So the robots that people did create...
They had chop, stompy...
Yeah, absolutely.
Things.
Brilliant. Absolutely. I've never, ever thought of that before. You're right. It's like the one with the big hammer that's coming down.
But much
brilliant. Oh, you are absolutely right. I will never watch this in the same way again.
I'm glad I brought something new. That's cool.
Unfortunately, due to time pressure, I have to not be here for the review of episodes 3 and 4, which is a great pity because they're the first two episodes where they don't actually contain Dildo. I will return at the end of the episode for the mini review. Keep watching.
Okie dokie, Ben arrives, okay, explain this to me. So he arrives because he went to pick up Polly for a date, right? Like a lunch date.
Oh, yes, because, one of my favourite lines was that he should come by the post office tower and that she'll stand him lunch.
Which is a lovely sort of phrase.
And I'm going to use that more. I'm going to stand people things now. I'll stand your pint.
Oh, thanks. Much appreciated. Okay, but my question was going to be, so why is he turning up at Charlie's pad? Because he doesn't know that she might have gone there. He was meant to pick her up at work. And at work, in fact, he would have just arrived and been hypnotized.
And been Wotanned.
Yeah.
Waltoned.
So that makes no sense. Oh, and he asks, so where is Dildo? And Doctor basically just goes, I actually couldn't give half a shit. Polly, however, no idea. We need to find this girl pronto.
Because she's smoking.
Yeah.
Something to that effect.
And Ben then heads off to Covent Garden. And we get actually some pretty nice footage of Covent Garden. They're like people unloading, like basically setting up the market.
Yeah.
And it's actually quite nice. The tiny little glimpse of Covent Garden that we get is basically, hasn't changed that much.
Mm. And Ben arrives sporting just the spiffiest trench coat.
Yeah, he looks so dapper.
If I could ASOS that trench coat, I would. But then he's got like these bell-bottom sailor
awful
pants,
trousers,
like from the 19th, like he was in the Royal Navy in the 19th century. I'm pretty sure he was either on the HMS Hood or he was on the Bismarck, something like that. Like he was just like super fucking old, like it's the 60s. Why do you need, like, are you auditioning for HMS Pinafore?
Yeah, they're Popeye trousers.
They are Popeye trousers.
Boom, done.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, anyway, Kablamatron, he arrives at the warehouse just as they are testing the Robot Wars Hulk Smash arm.
Absolutely.
On a table.
Sergeant Smash.
And we end the episode as the war machine closes in on him. Like, it's found him, it's approaching.
Or with its, like, chest searchlight.
Yes.
Like a really shit Iron Man.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
It's fantastic heads-up display. All right, end of episode 2. Episode 3, entitled Episode 3.
Ben is being hunted by by the war machine.
Yeah.
And is for some reason, instead of killed on sight, is taken prisoner, and Polly convinces the other slaves, like, you know,
the Wotanned slaves. Yeah.
To spare him because he will have to work for us.
Yeah.
Which is odd as an employee, like as like a recruiting strategy, because you've hypnotized the rest of your workforce and you're going to have this one free radical knocking about, and everyone's like, okay.
This is basically just a sign of her having retained a little bit of her humanity.
Yeah.
Yeah. However, what is really odd to me is, why do they make him work without hypnotizing him? I mean, they could quite easily just put him on the horn with Voltan and Shazam, he's hypnotized as well.
This is what I'm saying. Like, why leave him unhypnotized? Like, it's very odd. It just seems to just be introducing a variable that you don't need.
Okay, yeah, sorry. I thought you meant, like, why didn't they kill him?
No. I understand the need for, like, an increased workforce, because quite clearly they're out, like, their manufacturing strategy is aggressive.
Yeah. Okay, sure. All right, we cut back to Doc and Charlie, who are still just walking around doing God knows what. I mean, they are still just in Charlie's pad.
They've
done
the shit.
Nothing. I don't even know if that's what they're doing. Like, they're just kind of standing around in the same room, never sitting down, never doing anything, never doing any work, certainly.
Now, I think the subtext is fairly clear here, like, that at some point at some point they took a sauna together. It's quite clearly that sort of like, quite clearly they're like country club mother, like old motherfuckers just sat there going, oh, the gold standard. Yes.
And Doc goes, you know what, Charlie boy, Sailor Ben has been away for ages. Okay, I realize we already said we should disregard the timeline inconsistencies, but what the hell is meant by that? How long has he been gone? And if he's been gone for ages, what have they been doing in the house? Like, why isn't Doc popping around, like, looking for Dildo or anything? Oh, sorry, not looking for Dildo, because Dildo is now on the countryside. But, like, yeah, looking for Polly or looking for Ben.
I love that. Just go back to Dildo, not to harp into it too much. But did she leave everyone high and fucking dry? Like, in the middle of a humanitarian crisis? She just like, right, I'm off to the countryside.
And because she was hypnotized, fell asleep, and was then taken to the countryside to recuperate. It's not, spoiler alert, it's not until the end that we find out that, oh, she's fine now, like, she has recuperated. But she's been taken to the countryside to be with Charlie Boy's wife, while so that Charlie Boy can have his whole house subterranean dungeon all to himself, with the doc, actually. Anyway, we then get, I would say, probably the worst scene in the entire serial. We get the most shameless Dalek-esque exposition from the professor and the little man, as they just shout exposition at each other for no other reason than the benefit of the audience. Yes. They're like, this is what we are doing right now. What are you doing? I'm doing this.
Shall we do these next following points?
We should. What were they again?
List them in order of severity.
And that's it. That's it. And then we cut back to the warehouse and we find Polly and Ben now working. And they're stacking explosives that will never be used. And we see the other workers, the other, like, Votan slaves, stacking machine guns that will never be used. Someone puts an actual little, like, bomb inside what looks like an empty toolbox, closes the toolbox for no reason. Will it get used? No.
I think it's actually probably just a bath bomb. You know, like lovely possible. Salts that you just, that's for my special time.
This is my box. Yeah, yeah. Like, everything is labeled something, like high explosives or electronics. That's just labeled gym.
It's just, just Bed Bath and Beyond.
But for no reason whatsoever, and we are going to find out quite soon, that guns and explosives don't even work.
Yeah.
Like, why would you stockpile all this shit if it doesn't work?
Yeah. So, the gas that's emitted by the war machine either does one of two things. Three things, I should say. It kills you on sight,
As
it did with that man at 30 meters.
Or,
as we saw in this.
It does nothing.
It does nothing but create quite a cool disco vibe.
Yeah. Okay, like, agreed. You
know? And then the other
atmosphere.
The other thing it seems to do, we're implying here, or we're inferring here even, that it makes mechanical weaponry defunct.
Mechanical weaponry? Because I want to say the war machine itself is a form of mechanical weaponry.
Yeah, terrestrial mechanical weaponry. Basically all guns, tanks.
Okay, so why have the bad guys, why have the Votan people stockpiled Terran mechanical weaponry and explosives if they're never going to be used? Okay, fuck it. We'll get to that in a moment.
Shut up.
That's why. Okay, you're right. Okie dokie, Ben realizes, you know what, there's not even a guard at the door because even the guard is stockpiling weapons that we're not going to use, so I'm just going to fuck off. And Polly actually, at this point, has retained so much of her humanity, or regained so much of her humanity, that she lets him go.
Mm.
She doesn't make a big deal out of it, though. She just looks at him and looks back down at the explosives that they're not going to use.
She really liked that interchange.
It was nice. I liked that as well.
Again, it was something that you don't often get from a BBC writer in a prime time slot, is subtext. Like, no one said anything aloud, no exposition. It was just a look, a quite prolonged look, and then leaving. And
then carrying on working.
Absolutely. And you infer all the the tension in the dialogue and the you know, everything.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was actually quite nice. It was subtle. It was nice. Mm.
So Ben's escaped under Polly's behest, and now she's being interrogated as to why she let him leave.
Yeah. And as a consequence, and she's actually completely open about it. Yeah. She just goes, yeah, I saw him leave. No, I didn't do anything. I must now answer to Votan. Mm. And the consensus is, all right, she has betrayed us. Get her to go to Votan on her own. I mean, because we don't trust her. Let's not put a guard on her. Let's get her to go to Votan on her own, unescorted, so that Votan can kill her. But why don't they just kill her then and there? In fact, they fucking killed people just to test their weapons. I'm a little bit upset by this. Ben, meanwhile, has arrived at Doc and Charlie's house of pleasure and is telling them everything. Charlie basically goes, I don't believe a single word that is dropping out of your face. And then the second Doc and Ben have left, he literally picks up the phone and calls the Prime Minister and goes, you know what? Let's assemble the army. Let's take the army to, quote, the Covent Garden area.
Oh, wasn't there an interchange with...
the police!
Yeah, they're like, should we send the police? Like, what are the police going to do? Well,
they're probably going to get killed, like, by the hundreds.
All right, okay, well, then we'll send in the army. Why are you expending these policemen so, like, frivolously?
There are hundreds of people with families, with friends and lives and ambitions of their own.
Again, I think this is a sort of a callback to World War II where, like...
Cannon fodder.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Just, like, it's the cost of collateral damage, it's the cost of doing business.
Pretty much. Of,
yeah, anyway.
Yeah, you can't make an omelette without killing a few policemen.
Oh, that old chestnut.
All right, so we then get to see several instant repeats of the same army cutscenes as they disembark army vehicles and run around in army boots. And we now cut to Covent Garden, where all these soldiers have assembled. And there's, I guess, a sergeant or whatever, who is saying he's picking up a lot of radio interference in the area. Charlie Boy is there as well. And he goes, yeah, well, that's probably because there are loads of explosives in there. I don't know. I mean, I'm not an expert in explosives, but pretty sure they don't emit radio signals or whatever.
Well, even if they do, let's say they do, why does Charlie know that there are explosives?
And why do...
Well, why are there explosives?
Oh, well, he knows that because Ben said, yeah, we did nothing but stockpile explosives all day.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't understand why they would emit radio signals.
Yeah, exactly. It makes no sense. So, de facto, not only is Charlie an idiot, but the sergeant is kind of dumb as well. Not a very good soldier. So we then get this fantastic action sequence.
Mm.
And it lasts for a long time.
It really does, yeah.
And this is where, what we said before, no guns work, all the guns jam, all the rifles jam. There's even like a fucking mitrailleur kind of thing.
Bren gun, I think it is, or something. Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah, also jams. People, like soldiers, throw grenades at this war machine. They don't go off because presumably this gas is, or whatever, something is reducing, like just rendering them null and void.
Mm.
But also, there is lethal gas all over the place. And people are fighting in it. No one's coughing or dying.
But this is it. I don't know about the gas. That's why I'm like the three-pronged, like, if you've got killer gas, disco gas.
Or nothing.
And
atmosphere.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just dry ice. And then Chris de Burr playing in the background.
Lady. Okay. <anyway. laughs> Okay, and also, 6.5 minutes into episode 2, the war machine planning started. 18 minutes and 9 seconds into episode 3, the war machine is actually used. We have been planning for this war machine to be used for almost half the serial.
Which is sort of good in the sense that they had a clear rollout strategy. You know, it wasn't just like, they didn't just rush a prototype out.
No, you're right.
You know, they waited for service update too. Like, it was great.
This isn't like Apple releasing iPhones before they're ready.
Absolutely.
We don't want any negative feedback from the users of our war machines.
They had alpha, beta. You know, it was a phased approach.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, feature-driven development. Okay, also, screenshot on the website, people. One of the soldiers has the most formidable mustache ever depicted on television. It is amazing.
I just want to rub my face on it. Is that weird?
No, I mean, go ahead. Can I watch?
Well, if you'd let me, I would totally do that.
Okay.
That mustache has more magnetic pull than Voltaire.
My
face was just going towards the screen. Like, me and my father. Moving on.
Okay. The war machine is killing people left, right, and center.
Mm.
And the doctor just stands there, totally badass. Stands there, hands clutching his lapels
yeah.
as the thing approaches him, because somehow he knows that he's going to survive.
It's because he is. That is his shining moment of badassery.
Oh, yeah.
It's
this like, is, like, this is Hartnell.
Get back behind me, humanity.
Yeah. I
got this. And thus ends episode 3.
Episode 4. The only episode of this serial where we get war machines properly.
I guess so, yeah.
One
yeah.
out of four. The war machine approaches him and then just stops, basically.
Oh yeah, shit, why?
And I remember last night when you and I watched this, yeah. I said something which was ended up being wrong. I said, oh yeah, that's because he probably realizes that they need him alive and therefore the war machine is not going to kill him.
Mm.
Like, he's free to just stand there and, like, basically talk to it.
Yeah.
Like, try to reason or negotiate with it. Turns out completely wrong, because the reason it doesn't kill him is because the doctor somehow from afar was able to intuit that the programming of the onboard computer was incomplete.
Yeah, yeah. And how was he able to... programming? It's like,
that's not how programming works.
No, the program has been working pretty fucking well up to this point. If the program is kill things, it's doing it.
But that algorithm has probably been fed in completely.
Yes.
And it's not like every time you kill it, you're like expelling ones and zeros.
No, unless the logic was just like, you know, kill plus 30. And then it got to the 31st person, which is the doctor. It's like, he's just counting. He's counting all the people as they die. And he's like,
with his massive arm. Yeah, one, two.
No, but the doctor's seeing it. He's just seeing, oh, yeah, he's reached 30. This is my time to shine.
I'm going to stand here like a total badass and not tell anyone.
Absolutely. No, that is definitely not how programming works.
No. Before he explains all this, though, we get a little cutscene in a pub where genuinely the calmest BBC news anchor ever. And by the way, it turns out, I saw this online, an actual BBC news anchor playing himself.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's nice.
That's pretty classy,
that's
I think.
That's very good.
And in fact, something they do in New Who as well.
Absolutely. That's one of the strongest parts about... like
in Aliens of London and World War III, they had an actual BBC anchor play himself.
In New Who with the... what's the Olympics one with that little girl snatching people?
I don't remember that one.
It's a very good episode. But anyway, that's the best thing about it. If you've got a giant fucking corporation...
Yeah, you're part of the BBC. Let's just make use of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I think it's hilarious because this super calm BBC guy is talking on the TV. People in a pub are watching this very calm. Everyone's just like, yeah, it's fine. And he says, London has responded with characteristic calm.
Yeah.
Actual quote. It's like, yeah, there's a crazy robot on the loose in London shooting people with gas that maybe does nothing.
To be fair, if there is a city on Earth that is not prone to panic, it is London.
Really?
Right, yeah.
I remember some riots a couple of years ago.
No, those were sort of self-inflicted riots. There was a, like, you know, there's a Londoners rioting about London, 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 London. Generally speaking, when London itself is threatened by an external alien force...
people just kind of chill.
They don't give a fuck. Like, the Blitz, it basically leveled the city. Like, I remember seeing a documentary on the IRA bombings. I don't know if anyone's familiar with that. It's the Troubles in Ireland between Republican North and Catholic Protestant and all that sort of thing, and there was a big sustained campaign of terrorism, and there was this restaurant that had been bombed, and the documentary sort of news anchor or documentarian came to, and there's a guy with his two small children at the place, like the next day. It's like all bombed out and shit, but they've sort of like set up, and he's like, oh, why have you brought your children here? And it's like, yeah, it's a bit of adventure, isn't it? And that's London.
Wow. Okay, fair enough. There you go.
Absolutely.
Characteristic calm. And then we get a little tutorial. Doc and Charlie explain to the Prime Minister how programming and computers work. Like, computers, this box, and programming is that's like the stuff we put in it. pretty accurate, I think. And somehow, also, by looking at... there's a fucking reel-to-reel on the outside of the
War
Machine.
Yeah, that's how programming got done, didn't it?
Oh, you're right. That's what computers look like.
Yeah.
Votan is like nothing but reel-to-reel.
Yeah. But that's...
actually, that's pretty good.
That's pretty cool.
Wow. Yeah, agreed. Anyway, by looking at this, the Doctor has deduced that there are 11 more war machines somewhere in London, and the one that we saw actually had number 3 on it. So that was the third of, I guess, 11. 12 in total.
Right. Okay, yeah.
And we then cut to machine number 9, who just suddenly decides, you know what, I don't even like the guy who's engineering me, and kills him. And
yes, that was like a weird little meta, like, narrative in which... So,
obviously, the backstory of that.
I love that.
This guy must have at some point just abused the shit out of robot number 9.
I love the idea that a maniacal robot throws off the shackles of its oppressive maniacal
engineer.
Robot,
yeah, sorry.
And then goes away to create its own set of robot armies. But then there's dissent within its own ranks, and then there's just like dissenting robots all the way down.
Every generation.
Every generation. It's just like, fuck you.
robot rebellion.
I'm going to create my own robot army.
So yeah, very possibly when number 9 goes out to wreak havoc, that's like its own agenda.
Yeah.
Votan has no idea what's going on.
Yeah. You can't get the staff, can you, Votan?
Yeah. But we now also see that once a little bit of time has passed, people just kind of snap out of it. So like Major Green, the guy who... that's right, we said it was Brett before. It's not Brett. Brett is in the tower. Major Green is the dude who looks like, in my opinion, Stephen Fry from the Black Lodge.
Okay, Mustachio Green.
Mustachio Green. So so Major Green turns up and has no recollection of what's been going on. Like, he looks at the war machine and goes, oh my goodness, what is this? Mm. Right? So very little time has passed since he was lost in touch with Votan.
Yeah.
Dildo, meanwhile, has spent at least a full day in the countryside. Surely at this point she is already fine.
I think that she's a malingerer.
Nice one. We then get number 9 rolling around London town, including passing a car, and it's pretty cool because the car like rattles as it passes it.
Mm.
But when it has passed, the camera zooms in on the car radio, and on the car radio we hear a news report, the same news report as before, like, oh, there's a robot on the loose, guys. Let's just keep chilling. You might as well have another pint and not leave the pub just yet.
Also, the quarterfinals of the World Cup.
Yeah, but also the car is fucking parked and empty, so why is the radio on?
I assume that when the war machine passed it and jiggled its...
Oh, it turned it on.
It turned it on.
You know what? Explained.
Cool.
No problem. Thank you. Clarified. Actually, let's go through my entire point list and just check things off. No, that makes perfect sense. So the doctor now has this idea. He goes, well, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to capture one of these robots and reprogram it to work for us, basically. I just want to point something out here. They have a robot. They have captured it. He is standing next to said robot. Why do they have to go out of their way to devise this whole other way of like... Let's find a new robot and somehow like use electromagnetism to capture it so that we can then walk up to it. It's fucking alive and crazy dangerous.
The old robot is begging for new programming.
It's run out of it. It has no more ones and zeros.
It is gasping for new programming. Yes, I did not understand that either.
Makes no sense. And also, I think, I don't know if it's even worth a screenshot, because it's just going to be the same screenshot. Spoiler alert for later on. Actually, fuck it. Okay, remind me. There's a reprogramming screenshot opportunity coming up.
Right.
Whatever. Because they're still in Common Garden, right?
Mm.
Yeah. Shazam, not for long, because now they're heading off to Cornwall Gardens in SW7, which I looked up is right between High Street Kensington and Gloucester Road.
And then they devise a, what is essentially like a WWE wrestling ring.
Yeah, that is electrified.
That is electrified, because that would work.
Yeah, I guess. Like, they're creating an electromagnet. It's inside it. All of a sudden,
but
it stops working.
Are they creating an electromagnet?
Isn't that it?
All just wiring?
Wait, I thought it was, like, electrified. Magnet? Isn't it electrified?
Well, yeah.
Like, I mean, if you take electric wire and you wrap it around a piece of metal,
oh, right, yeah,
and you electrify it, then that metal piece of metal turns into a magnet. I may be misremembering this from physics in school, but I think that's how you make an electromagnet. And it, the machine, is the piece of metal, and it is de facto wrapped around by wiring that they're turning on, like that they're running electric current through, I think. The whole thing is total bullshit, because later on we're also getting like the worst definition of electric current from the doctor. I think we need to soundbite that later on as well,
right.
But fuck it, they capture the thing and we have another soundbite, a doctor soundbite in fact, which I would like to like to bring up. What do you say, shall we have a doctor soundbite?
Let's.
Well, to coin a phrase for Charles, I neutralized it.
That phrase exists. Neutralize? That's not something he invented.
Nope, that exists already, Doctor. Yeah. You cannot coin that phrase.
Quit taking credit for what other people have done.
That, my friend, is just the English language.
And this is where we get the screenshot opportunity. He has now reprogrammed number 9, the new one that they just captured. But in the background, we see the Common Garden set. So in fact, what he has done is he hasn't left that previous set. He is still in Covent Garden. What they've done is just take off the number 3 off the machine, replace it with a number 9, not worried about plonking it somewhere in SW7. They're still in Covent Garden, and they're just like, oh, well, we did this work now. Let's forget about the fact that we had another one of these, and that we moved across town.
Yeah, I guess.
Is it just me? I think that's hilarious.
Kensington and Covent Garden are basically the same.
Pretty much. Sorry, everyone who is not familiar with London.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. Awesome shot of number 9 in front of a movie backdrop.
Oh, that's the best. That really sticks
it's
in my mind.
It's beautiful, right?
It's kind of
like... It's
like
a James Bond movie.
It's like a pastiche of someone driving a car. Like, if you were to...
Yeah, and shortly thereafter, they are driving a car, and we get the same movie backdrop.
It's amazing.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm wondering if we're going to see that in upcoming episodes, like, very soon, because that's like, oh, shit, this is new technology. We can, like, just project a road behind
us. Amazing. It's just...
And then we also get, I don't know if it's worth a soundbite, but the Doctor provides this entirely irrelevant comparison to electric currents. Because Charlie Boy, he goes like, so what's going to happen when number 9, who now works for us, goes to Votan, spoiler alert, and kills him? He goes, yeah, it'll be like when electric current meets electric currents.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not a physicist, but I don't think that's how it works. And B, how is that a relevant comparison? Why not just say, like, it's like when you cut the head off a snake.
Yeah, you're right. That is a much more cogent analogy.
Thanks.
I really hope
known that I made the international sign for scissors.
I really hope that's how go about all the metaphors in your life.
That's how I do it, man.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot like cutting the head off a snake.
Anyway, then we get, like, the most rushed serial ending ever.
Oh, yeah.
All of a sudden, Ben pops up at the top of the BT Tower, rescues Polly, Shazam, problem solved. Number 9 arrives at the top of the BT Tower. How did he get up there? He's basically a Dalek. He can't climb stairs. He probably won't fit inside the lift. If he did, we didn't see him enter a lift. How the fuck does he get through really, like, slender doorways and shit?
He press buttons.
He cannot press buttons. He doesn't even have a plunger. Like, this thing is actually worse than a Dalek. So... He's now at the top. He blows up Votan. He gasses the little man's ass. Everyone snaps back to it. And then, Shazam, good guys win. Boom. Problem solved.
So anticlimactic. For such a great lead-up.
Yeah.
I say great. For such an adequate lead-up. it was just such little payoff.
Well, considering we've had a lead-up of 3.5 episodes, you'd think that, like, the actual war would take at least an episode and a half. And then you'd have, like, a closer of half an episode or something. Instead, we get a closer of 5 minutes. The Doctor doesn't even, like, speak to the Prime Minister or to Charlie Boy and say, yeah, I helped you. No one thanks him. Yeah. He doesn't get, like, closure within this serial. The next shot is the Doctor back at the TARDIS.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
Yeah, which, by the way, also, I think this is worthy of screenshots, plural. I didn't pick up on this when we watched it or when I rewatched it today, but apparently they refurbished the TARDIS prop in between. So the first shot and the second shot of the TARDIS, actually it looks very different.
Yes, and there's something about the St. John's ambulance.
Exactly. Though. That's been painted over. I didn't notice this when I watched it. Oh, and the lock was moved.
You've got to pimp that thing from time to time.
Pimp that TARDIS.
Occasionally, you just got to get your swerve.
It's got, like, lit up rims around the end. Yeah, nice.
Yeah. I heard you like, you know, relative dimension, so I'll put a relative dimension in your relative dimension.
Nice. Yeah, pretty much the end of it. Polly and Ben turn up. You go, we spoke to Dildo. She's fine. She wants to stay with her friends. She basically said, go fuck yourself, Doctor.
I think she was just like, look, 10 kidnappings is my limit.
Yeah.
I've only got one rule, and it's not to get kidnapped 11 times.
She doesn't even thank him. She doesn't say anything. Yeah, total B-word.
But like JD said earlier, it was probably because she was pushed.
Probably.
As an actress.
But then again, we have had exoduses, exodi? on the show of people, like, you can wrap it up quite quickly. I mean, Stephen probably didn't leave of his own volition. He probably left, as the character wasn't written out because Peter Purvis didn't want to do the show anymore. It was probably because, like, his contract ended or he, like, the audience didn't respond well to him or something. But they still wrote in a really ham-fisted, shitty ending for him so that he was able to shake hands with the Doctor and say goodbye.
Yeah.
Right?
But basically, it went, oh, where's Dodo? Nope. That's it.
Yeah, that is pretty much it. The Doctor gets in the TARDIS. Ben realizes at some point during the show, we failed to mention this, but he basically stole one of the Doctor's TARDIS keys.
Yeah.
He and Polly sneak into it, very Steven-esque, and the TARDIS dematerializes, just as some couple who, like, they may not even be actors, they just walk into frame, look straight into the camera, end credits.
Yeah. It's fair, the camera, like, did you just see that?
Or possibly, are you filming us? End of the War Machines.
Oh, wow.
Wow, indeed.
What a ride.
Reviews.
As a serial, as distinct from, what was the last one I did with you, was the Gunfighters, I guess.
Yeah.
Certainly had so much promise. I mean, the whole concept of a impetuous and rebellious operating system that, you know, throws off the shackles of its creator and, you know, it's basically Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Right? It's Mary Shelley, but for the 20th century, and then...
Sort of, yeah. Someone has created life, in a sense.
Yeah, created life, and then that life is not responding to its creator in the way that, you know, basically, the human condition, but in wrapped up in programming.
Yeah.
And that theme strongly played out and still is being played out, and I think it fits into that as a that tradition.
Yeah.
Well, just very badly executed. It'd be like you said, I still struggle with the idea of Voltan as a depth, any villain with depth.
Yeah. Agreed.
I would love to see him reprise.
Apparently he does return.
Ah.
Yeah, I say he as though, like, in novels and possibly an audiobook, I'm not sure.
I think that he's that it is ripe for New Who.
Yeah, you could definitely have it
for a Moffat. Like,
someone could find one of those old reels.
Because Moffat, like, fuck you, the programming. The Moffat's big thing for me has always been that he just tries to make everything epic and all ending. And if there's anything that actually could benefit from a bit more grandiosity, grandizing, is Voltan.
Yeah.
And I think that you've got actually a much stronger storyline there. It's great that Dodo fucked off. Quite like the Swinging 60s feel.
Yeah.
Polly and Ben are both very good additions to the team. Strong Hartnell performance. It was really, actually, and you don't get to say this often, but it was the villain that let this thing down, I think, a little.
Interesting.
I think actually all the other constituent people played their parts relatively well.
Okay.
Not the good guys, but the bad guys. Well, like, conceptually great. In execution, not particularly much. I don't know. I couldn't see the terror.
Okay, yeah. That's
the thing.
Fair enough.
But okay, generally speaking, so out of 5, 2.6.
Oh, yeah.
It's big. It's big.
Yeah. Completely fair review. I'm going to have to echo some of your sentiments. I think the Swinging 60s, great vibe for the show. Yeah. Really, that's something that I didn't even realize it, but this show missed the bass.
Oh, well. Yeah, yeah.
Right?
As a zeitgeist sort of thing,
yeah.
You know.
You live during awesome times. Make fucking use of that.
Yeah. Yeah? If anything, they're slightly late to the party, but glad that they've
joined. Yeah. Ben and Polly, right out of the gate, amazing. Such charisma on screen, much more so than, I mean, we already said this, but I like them, and I want to see them, and they actually work really well together. Yeah, they're flirtatious.
The actor that plays Ben seems to be quite a good physical actor.
Like, yeah, when he, like, manhandled that total rapist in Inferno, awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's an Ian for the younger generation. So, Ben and Polly, love him. Dildo leaving, I am both pleased with the fact that she's gone, and displeased with the way that she's gone. I'm going to have to mark this down for just having almost omitted. I feel like I've been robbed of the experience of going, yes, stop saying goodbye, Dildo. I don't give a shit. Just leave.
Mm.
But in this case, it's like, well, it just takes all the steam out of it.
Basically, she gave an Irish goodbye.
Like, is that,
you know,
what?
Have you ever known that expression? I really hope that that's not terribly offensive. But the Irish goodbye is when you're at a bar or you're like at a party and you want to leave and you can't be fucked to say goodbye to anyone. So you just slip out the door.
That sounds massively racist.
Yeah, very possibly.
The idea of introducing a villain that is basically there to replace the Daleks, I get the sentiment. Don't think they did a very good job. They focus too much on the war machines as actual, like, Dalek templates, or like following the Dalek template. But they didn't do it very well. The Daleks have charisma, partly because they can speak. Like, they can interact with the Doctor. You can either sympathize or empathize or whatever, with them. But you can't with the war machines because they're just, like, they're go-karts. Like, they're just bumper cars.
In the organizational chart of Doctor Who villains, does that make Voltan Davros?
Basically, yeah. Voltan is the Davros of the war machines.
The shitter Davros.
Yeah, basically. Pretty much. Mm. Voltan, however, I disagree with you. Mm. I don't need that depth. What pisses me off about, not in Voltan, because he's just a computer. Mm. I don't need him to have a rationale beyond this world would be better without the interference of humans.
Right.
But what pisses me off is the complete inconsistency with which he executes his plan. I can speak. I'm just not going to speak. I can telepathically control people. I'm not going to. I'm going to build clunky robots that will take over the world instead. I'm going to assemble lots of explosives. While I do that, I'm also going to devise a gas that may or may not render all explosives defunct. Like, it's bullshit. So Votan, marking it down for that.
That's just the problem with rapid prototyping.
Well, you're rapid fucking prototyping. He also had a goddamn printer printing out his words all the time. Man, that pissed me off. Audio input, audio output, just going to print stuff. Okay, whatever. And also, one character that I'm going to mark it down for a little bit, Charlie Boy. Charlie Boy was almost entirely irrelevant to this thing. I get that he had influence, and I get that he was able to assemble, like, help convince the Prime Minister to assemble the army. Mm. But aside from that, he was basically there, I think, more as a plot device to keep the Doctor out of the plot. Because most of the time that the Doctor spent with him, the Doctor did nothing. It was the second he left Charlie Boy's house that he actually got into the action, and when he did, he was awesome. Bear in mind, we have, what, two more serials of Hartnell? And then we have no more Hartnell. Mm. This is it. Like, it's pretty sad. I want to see as much Hartnell as possible. I don't want someone whose role in this story I cannot really understand just taking him away from me. So fuck you, Charlie Boy. Oh. And last but not least, man, the ending was anticlimactic.
So,
oh my god. It's taking it down. Like, I would probably have started somewhere around 4 point whatever, and then I'm slowly but surely taking it down and down and down and down because of all these things. And I think I'm going to end up at, I'm going to go above you though. Mm. Let's say 2.7. There you go.
Right.
Not massively higher, but yeah, there you go. Fuck it. 2.7. And here's what JD thought.
Hi, it's JD here. Sorry about missing the second half of the show, but here is my review of The War Machines. I quite like it. It's very different from the Doctor Who that's gone before it. It's modern day. It's definitely swinging 60s. They get rid of Dodo, finally, the useless shrill that she was. And they get Polly and Ben, who, you know, start together, end together, and basically become the dynamic duo of Ben and Polly. One word. Very much like Ian and Barbara at the start of the show. They are pretty much inseparable. And it really does almost harken back to those good old days of 1963. It has its flaws. It has many, 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 many flaws. Most of them being the fact that the war machines themselves are totally ridiculous. They are proto-Daleks, and they're just not that good. Their weapons are illogical. They don't appear to be a very big threat. And Votan is possibly the most ridiculous giant computer enemy that the Doctor will face. Not even accepting Boss in the Green Death in the John Pertwee era. So what we have here is pretty much a good episode marred by some fairly bad execution. Ultimately, I think that Dodo's leaving, while a good thing, was executed awfully. Ben and Polly's introduction is very good. Probably one, by this point, the most fleshed out of the new characters. You know, even Stephen only got, you know, right at the end of his story as he was introduced. And then his character development was up and down. Ben and Polly seem to have joined the crew as very well-rounded characters. Overall, I'm going to give the War Machines... It's a difficult one, because I love the story, and I love, you know, 1960s London, and I love Ben and Polly, and I love William Hartnell, but the War Machines are shit. I'm going to give this a 3.999 recurring, on the grounds that I don't feel like I can give it a 4, but don't want to give it less than a 4. So that's where I'm going to stick for this one. Listener,
please. Okie dokie, and we have 3 mini reviews. However, 2 of these mini reviews, they're kind of maxi reviews.
I would say so.
Yeah. And we have pointed out, I'm really, really sorry about this, but as you can tell, we're already running over here, and JD's even had to leave. So what we're going to do is, in the interest of fairness, we're gonna pick out a couple of points from all of these reviews. I'm sorry, we just don't have time to read them out in full. So what we would suggest that you do is head on over to whobackwhen.com, and you can read them in full. And I strongly urge that you do.
Absolutely, they are glorious.
They're fantastic reviews.
In their expansion.
And there's actually quite a bit of overlap between them as well. It's absolutely nice to see. And between their reviews and our review. I quite like that, actually. It's nice to see that we're totally on the same page.
Not alone, yeah. It's great. Yeah.
So let's start off with a review from Alan. Gallifreyan Buccaneer.
I think one of his points that I think it's certainly a good one, Wotan directly referring to the Doctor as Doctor Who. We brought that up earlier. Definitely it was a big bugbear for JD.
Everyone.
Absolutely.
Not just for JD. Jesus Christ, man. This is a weird
JD
moment.
JD did look like he was about to explode. Ladies
and gentlemen, you didn't see JD, but he turned like a serious shade of purple.
Absolutely.
Pretty cool.
It's a significant moment in the Whovian universe that is the only time that is, you know, referred to as Doctor Who in... And this is supposed to be the machine that knows everything.
So yeah, exactly. Which is ridiculous.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and Gallifreyan Buccaneer points something out. It, partly that I knew because JD's pointed it out on the show, in fact. But another thing, namely that he was credited, as in the character was in the credits as Doctor Who, until Davison said, no, you need to change this. And then I guess he was changed to the Doctor. Mm-hmm. What has been mentioned on the show, however, is that Eccleston is also in the credits as Doctor Who. And then Tennant, weird actually, like, I mean, even Davison and Tennant have like a private connection to each other, right? I mean, Tennant is married to Davison's daughter, I think.
Oh.
Or at least was. Yeah, Tennant then pointed out, no, his name isn't Doctor Who. Fuck you guys. He is the Doctor. So yeah, very cool. And Gallifreyan Buccaneer gives the War Machines 3.2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A solid 3.2.
Solid 3.2.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a sloppy one. Not a loose one.
No. It's a hard 3.2.
Really sorry for not reading your review in full, Gallifreyan Buccaneer. It's an awesome review. People should read it. Ladies and gentlemen, do you happen to be Gallifreyan Buccaneer? No? Then you should follow him on Twitter. He is at Alan Trussler. That's Trussler with two S's. Thank you very much again.
So, moving on then to Stephen.
Stephen.
That's at SGamer82.
82, the number.
Again, another fantastically expansive review, possibly even putting ours to shame.
Yeah, I think so. And actually, he had a brainwave that you did.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's... Yeah, I'm going to dive straight into the...
Yeah, do it,
into our shared connection over Robot Wars. That's exactly how I felt about things. Yeah, absolutely similar looking to the homemade robots, which, I don't know, maybe that's like a fidelity that I didn't give them enough credit for, that actually people creating killer robots did the same thing as people creating fictional killer robots. So that's, you know, like, that's something. Or unless that's art imitating life, or life, if life imitating art, one of the two.
Very possible. Are you now somehow judging Robot Wars? I have never seen it, by the way.
Very possibly. Or I'm or I'm retrospectively judging. I don't know. I'm, at the very least, there's some sort of like design congruity, which is nice.
Yeah. Definitely. And also, Jesus Christ, he has crammed so much awesomeness into this review. And again, we're just pulling out a couple of points here. But he does say the one thing, and I think it's fair to say that it is like the major beef that he has with this show, is the fact that Dildo gets zero goodbye. I mean, he does the whole comparison with Katarina and Sarah and everyone else, but Dildo gets nothing.
Yeah.
And it's, I'm sorry, I agree. Oh, we've already said it. We agree with you, dude.
Yeah, it's kind of disrespectful.
It's totally disrespectful. Even Dildo, whom we disliked. Mm. Let's just say
I think there's a story there. There must be a story. I know JD sort of hinted towards the fact that she was pushed, and et cetera, and that she's not really been involved with the Who franchise going forward. But I think there might be some. I wonder if there's something we can try to unearth about the circumstance of the departure of Dildo.
Does anyone know this? If anyone knows this, then please pop a comment on the website, whobackwhen.com. Add your wisdom. Share it with us.
Please do.
And in the meantime, we said this already, but follow Stephen on Twitter at SGamer82. Thanks again for the review, dude.
Awesome. And what was the score?
Oh, sorry, yeah. He gave it 2.5 out of 5.
Very similar to mine.
SGamer, I know you already said this, but like, I mean, your big heart, what's happening to your big heart, man? Your big heart, just saying your big heart. I'm saying it a lot. Big heart.
Hang on, so the sign off for that review, mistakes with the character could be forgivable, but ruining the final moments of the show, not so much.
Agreed. Yeah. I don't know if that's my biggest beef with the show, but I absolutely agree.
It certainly feels
it's a big one.
It feels tainted, doesn't it, a little bit. Okay, so moving on then to Kyle Rath.
Kyle Rath. How you doing, dude?
Again, another amazingly,
super maxi review.
Oh, it's a brilliant, though.
This is Kyle Rath, by the way, returning to his, like, the early incarnation of Kyle Rath Doctor Who maxi reviews. I mean, like, he's submitted a novella. This is massive, and it's awesome.
To be honest, next time, Kyle, we're going to need a table of contents, I think. But it's wonderful. Sorry. So let's launch him with the first major.
He's got some pros, some cons. And in the pro column, here's something we agreed on. Polly and Ben. Yeah, absolutely. Holy shit. He even makes the little reference that I want to say I made this reference. Maybe JD did this and I'm just misremembering or I'm taking credit for his work here. But Kyle also makes the reference to Ian and Barbara.
Mm.
Babs. Yeah. Yes,
absolutely.
And there is a little bit of that. Like they've got chemistry. They definitely have chemistry. They're like flirting with each other and shit.
Yeah.
Pretty nice.
Then the next good point, the idea of the great intelligence, which is, it's a great callback. I didn't even think of that.
Or call forward.
Call forward, yeah. Even. Yes, yeah. Didn't even think of that as a...
Is that the only other iteration of an AI, basically?
There's probably something with it. I mean, that's the thing. As we're embarking on this journey, I guess we'll find out and we'll call back and say, hey, Kyle was super on
the ball.
On the ball.
Yeah. Here's the ball on top of it, Kyle.
Exactly. But that is a great parallel to make.
Yeah. I'm also going to pull out one of his points from the con column, the bad. Totally agree with you on this one, or totally you agreeing with me on this one. As you say, the over-enunciated exposition. Yes. Holy shitting balls. Where you have the two votant people just screaming exposition at each other. I agree. Man, that absolutely just, it pulls down the score.
Mm. I guess the move on to the score. So 2.3 out of 5. So actually fairly similar across the board.
Yeah.
Like in the same ballpark.
We have 2.3 from Kyle. We have 2.5 from Steve. And we have 3.2 from Gallifreyan Buccaneer.
Yeah,
Gallifreyan Buccaneer has inherited Steven's big heart. Yeah, nice one. Kyle, you two deserve a standing ovation for your maxi review. People who are not Kyle, go on to Twitter and follow him. He's at Sinister Super Spy. That is super without any vowels. All three reviews, definitely worth reading. Absolutely. Check them out.
Yeah, great. You can find them on the website, whobackwhen.com.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that wraps up this episode.
Yes,
this was awesome.
It really was.
I really liked doing the ménage à trois.
Yeah,
it was pretty good.
The triplets. So the next.
By the way, no one's wearing shirts.
Yeah, it's a new thing we're trialing out. Next time, no pants. So the next serial is the Smugglers.
Yeah, the next classic one is the Smugglers. Probably going to be a new Who review or two in between. But
stay tuned.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for listening. You can follow Nick on Twitter. He is at Nickulele.
Yes.
That's like a ukulele.
Nickulele. I think that's right.
It's like ukulele, but with Nick.
Yeah. I'll be on the Who Back When thing somewhere. Come find me.
Yeah. You can follow me as well. I am at Ponkin. Here's a soundbite of JD singing how you spell that.
Ponken. Ponkin.
Thanks, JD. Until next time, rock on, be rad and excellent to each other, and ciao.
Kablamo! Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends? No problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/WhoBackWhen. All in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus Who Back When. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account. No lie. So give us a follow. You guessed it. That's @WhoBackWhen. All in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your ear balls in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Ciao.
Who Back When?